Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I believe with every fiber of my being that the course I have set out is the right one for our country and all our people.
What has been achieved today is not Brexit.
I don't believe this government has negotiated fairly or effectively.
Brexit is a lose-lose situation.
We have always followed the EU mandate.
It is utterly unacceptable to anybody who believes in democracy.
Hello and welcome to Brexit, the final countdown. I'm seasoned broadcaster and nation's sweetheart, Becca Hudson. And this week, I'm delighted to be joined by Express.co.uk head of news, Paul Baldwin. Hello.
Hello.
And Europe editor, Joe Barnes.
Hello.
Hello. Paul is fresh from the piste, often found on the piste.
I was indeed on the piste.
How was your holiday? Where did you go?
I went to France to ski.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Very fancy.
But I didn't do a great deal of skiing.
No, more interested in the...
It's a load of faff, isn't it, really?
The reading. Is it a load of faff?
Yeah, I've never skied.
Joe, are you a skier?
I've never been skiing and I will not go out of fear of my life.
Okay, right, very sensible.
You're not missing anything, mate. It's a lot of posh people showing off.
A bit like this podcast.
It's for the metropolitan elite, and that is exactly what we're not.
Totally is. I felt very unwanted and out of place, frankly.
We have 16 days until Brexit, you'll be relieved to hear, so let's make the most of it and begin. Okay, so the WAB, which once upon a time was kind of big news, wasn't it? It used to get us very excited on this podcast.
Yes.
Passed in the Commons without any fanfare.
Yes.
Last week, we were all preoccupied instead with the return of Love Island, the latest instalment of Keeping Up with the Crown and World War III.
As we always are.
As we always are. So it's now in the Lords and kind of being debated in our second chamber. The kind of controversial, interesting thing, I think, is that the government voted against the Dubs Amendment, which was the commitment made by Theresa May and her government to reuniting child refugees with their families. It's been taken out. And Lord Dubs is kind of lobbying very hard to get it put back in.
Yes.
And it's obviously not, what's the word, game-changing... It's probably not game-changing to the legislation, but I wondered what you both thought about this and whether this kind of sets the mood music for the next 5 years of being with Boris, or and whether you think there's a better place for this kind of legislation, whether you think it should be tacked on to the WAB. Does anyone care about this kind of stuff anymore? This used to fill episodes and episodes of podcasts.
I think it's kind of instructive that it is the anniversary today, the one-year anniversary of Theresa May's bid to get the Brexit withdrawal agreement through the Commons.
When
when she lost by 230 votes. And then if, you know, years long time in politics, we thought then there is no chance, or, you know, many people thought then there is no chance of this ever happening. And here we are. So
yeah.
It's kind of instructive that we're talking about a detail of the withdrawal agreement bill.
Yeah.
And we've fully accepted, and the WAB itself...
Yeah,
is going through. Is coming down the tracks, basically. Yeah.
And you don't think the Dubs Amendment is a stumbling block?
No, I don't. I think it's probably to be welcomed, and I think it probably will be. And I just don't see it as a massive problem.
Do you think he'll get back put back into the bill?
Almost certainly, yes.
Joe, what do you think? I'm just interested in this because it's child refugees, for God's sake. I mean, I thought it was a universal...
I don't think the government is going to kind of renege on this kind of previous promise, but what it's doing is it's showing its strength and its majority by refusing kind of to back things like the Dubs Amendment being put into the WAB, like Erasmus, the European University kind of subsidised into these bills, because it can go, actually, no, it's the government's choice of doing this in the future. We're not going to be held, we're not going to be whipped by Parliament to do this anymore. We are the almighty power. So it's, I think it's a bit harsh at this stage to kind of say that the government is ruining kind of children's lives by not allowing them to reunite with their families in the UK, not allowing them to go and study abroad in Europe. But basically what it's saying by refusing these amendments is to go, actually, no, we are the whip hand of power now. We are the ones who make this decision. We are we have basically reclaimed our sovereignty through Brexit. It's our decision. That's exactly what these refusals are about, I think, at the moment.
A show of strength. Okay, so that means that the next chapter of this great saga is going to be the trade negotiations. We've got 11 months.
Joe can't wait. He's looking forward to it. This
is why we
pouring over millions of pages of trade agreements.
This is where it might get a little punchy. We've only got 11 months to come up with a comprehensive trade agreement with the EU. And I don't want to get too bogged down in the detail on this because we might lose a few listeners because it's probably not the sexiest stuff to go on about. But there's some really interesting chatter this morning about this is where it could get kind of nasty. So the EU are going to insist on things like keeping its share of fishing rights for around 70 stocks that straddle the EU and UK waters. They're going to kind of insist on this like dynamic alignment with their standards on the environment, taxation, labour and social standards, environmental protection, the level playing field is what they call it. So insisting that the UK matches the EU in all those areas so that we can't start undercutting them and becoming a kind of more sexy proposition to business from outside Europe. Does this therefore mean that the threat of a no-deal Brexit hasn't gone away and that come the end of 2020, we will be leaving on WTO terms? Joe?
Well, basically, the question the EU is asking, and it is setting the stall out for Boris to go, do you want to have frictionless trade, free, like genuinely free trade with Europe, or do you not? And say, if you want free trade, they're going to expect him to swallow things like access to the UK's fishing waters for EU vessels, signing up to the EU's level playing field, so basically on environment and labour standards, not allowing Britain to change its rules too much from other countries. But if Boris Johnson goes, actually, do you know what, I don't really want frictionless trade, then those demands will soon vanish and then something else will have to be hashed out.
I agree. And the thing for me is it's a negotiation, and it's a negotiation with a deadline, and Boris is at the helm, and Boris is the man who knows about deadlines. We've joked before about the fact that it took the EU 7 years to do a trade deal with Canada, which is basically importing and exporting trees, isn't it? What else is there?
But, maple syrup?
Sorry, Canadians. Apologies.
Royals? Royals. Sorry. We got it in there.
So we did indeed. So you've got that. He understands the deadline for a start, and he is nothing if not a pragmatist. And if there is negotiations and deals to be done, then I just feel that he is the man in the way that Theresa May was not.
Well, she wasn't a man.
Well, wasn't
depending
a man,
on however you identify, well, Theresa May's pronouns were not.
Who knows how she identifies at the moment?
We're not getting into that.
It's a very flexible world we live in.
You're doing a great impression of Piers Morgan already today, Paul.
Thanks.
Okay, so with that then, we're saying our reluctance, or in fact Boris's refusal, outright refusal, and manifesto promise not to extend the deadline at the end of the transition period. You are confident, Paul, that he will whip up a mega deal that doesn't involve importing or exporting trees.
In place. It just is in place. A lot of the deal, the withdrawal agreement, it's just common sense. It's just, of course, we'll do that.
But this is the trick.
We don't want
this
deadly toys, and we don't want, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So there are negotiations to be done, but it's...
So you're an optimist. You're backing Boris.
I'm absolutely an optimist, yeah.
And you don't think that the threat of no deal is any stronger or still looming?
I think it's receded from where it was a few months ago, yeah, absolutely.
Well, there probably wasn't going to be a deal when we were definitely leaving, yeah. And we were all stockpiling insulin. Yeah. Yeah. Joe, what do you think? You're kind of the man on the ground there occasionally, aren't you?
I'm trying to think of what... before December, before kind of... After the deal had been done, I went around talking to my sources and one of them, I think, called it a first aid kit kind of deal, and basically said, what we're going to do is we're going to try and eliminate the big hurdles to trade. We're going to turn this no deal cliff edge into a gentle slope. I don't know what that would be in skiing terms, Paul. Not a
red
double
run.
Diamond run or whatever they're called.
Paul's run to the pub, the bar.
Yeah, exactly. So what they're going to... Look, well, I don't think we can be under any illusions that this deal in 11 months is going to be all singing, all dancing. I've spoken to all manners of UK former trade officials, EU trade officials. Kind of the level of detail being included, like, won't be an all singing, all dancing trade deal. I think we can kind of agree on that. But what we're going to do is we're going to get a deal that kind of probably eliminates tariffs for key kind of exports into Europe and key imports. There will probably be some fisheries attached to it. It will be a kind of a run-of-the-mill basic trade deal that kind of builds off of our current relationship of being quite aligned. But what they will look to do in the future is they will look to have evolution clauses that means that we can carry on basically adding Lego bricks to this trade deal, and eventually in 7 years' time that we will have this all singing, all dancing kind of UK-EU relationship.
Okay, so you don't, either of you, it seems, aren't buying into the chatter, to use that phrase again this morning, that Boris was kind of softening his language yesterday when he said on that hard-hitting BBC interview with Dan Walker, where he said it was epically likely that we'd get a deal, which is obviously quite different to we will definitely get a deal, but you both...
I think epically likely is hardly underplaying it.
I mean, you say it all the time, so I'm just quite used to people describing things as epic.
When if I use the word epic?
Yeah, I mean, you're just never that effusive about anything. Okay, well, I love to have such a cheering chat about trade with you both. Okay. So we're both 11 months, get it sorted, building blocks, Lego blocks, all those good analogies.
Something will be done.
It's interesting that you're getting the feedback from over there, that a kind of resignation that it's got to be done, so we might as well get on with it, right?
Is that exactly? And before the Brexit deal was agreed between Boris and Jean-Claude Juncker in October, they had something called the blame game in Brussels about the European Union was absolutely adamant that it would never be blamed for no deal. And now we're at another kind of scenario, but the blame game is kind of flipped. Boris Johnson has literally put his cards on the table and said, I will not extend the transition period, which, to remind our listeners, basically means that we will be signed up to the EU rule book. So we will essentially be in the customs union, be in the single market until December 2020. And he has said that we won't extend that. And that is basically him setting his stall out. So to avoid the blame game being labelled and put on Brussels has now gone, actually, okay, we're willing to work with your timetable, let's go. We don't think it's ideal, but we have to, because we don't want to be the ones blamed for kind of a bad deal at the end of December.
Okay, well, in the interest of balance, I'm going to say I disagree, and I think that Boris is going to have a tough time selling it over here if he starts giving our fish back to the Portuguese and our... I think they've especially got their eye on it. And if he starts, you know, we want to turn this great island into the Macau of the Channel. And I think if he's not allowed to start slashing labour rights and maternity leave and minimum wage guarantees, which I'm pretty sure is what he's got up his sleeve, I think he's going to have a tough time selling that to the people sitting behind him in the House of Commons. And I appreciate how gung-ho we're going to be. But the likes of June Mummery and all those people who lent him a Brexit vote are expecting a pretty, won't be happy to see these levels of compromise that I think we're going to end up having.
Why would he slash minimum wage? How many votes would he get?
To make this great country, you know, exciting and desirable. Let me finish my point, then I can explain so you can learn something. So the companies overseas will want to do business here, but they'll want to do it if there aren't loads of guarantees for workers, won't there? But if we have to enshrine all those kinds of things to keep alignment with the EU, we won't become as appealing as we want to be.
It would just never happen. Boris is a centrist. Oh, okay. You keep sort of, you know...
Which bit was centrist about the campaign?
He's a natural centrist. He's not an extreme right-winger. He just isn't. If you lived through the Thatcher era, you'd know about extreme right-wingers, but he just isn't.
I'm talking about what we're going to need to do to our economy and our models to make ourselves an appealing place to do business. That's what I'm talking. You can keep pulling a face. I just find it quite rude.
I'm not pulling a face.
Okay, let's talk about something Paul likes talking about. Can you say this after me? Will you bung a bob for a Big Ben bong? Can you say that?
No.
It's actually very hard. Bees are harder to say than you'd think. It's the front page of our newspaper today, because I think that was the top of the news agenda, actually, that the bell should ring.
It's a great story. It's a brilliant capturing the imagination of the public type story. And
£500,000 is going to cost to ring the bell.
Well, this
or are
is,
you going to volunteer
this
to do
is
it?
The thing. I would you volunteer.
You'd be
to
a
do
great
it,
Quasimodo.
Obviously. But one of the reporters did contact the contractors, I think it was yesterday. And I have to say, my initial, oh, surely they should ring for Brexit, was tempered a bit, because it's just bad timing. There's no floor there. So we'd have to
What, beneath the bell?
Oh, no. So that's the problem, right? They've taken the floor out.
Oh, a Remainer did that, probably.
Probably, almost certainly, some killjoy Remainer.
Was that Keir
Starmer? So you'd have to put another floor in. And it's, as I say, it's just bad timing. It's just where it was in the sort of the work that we're doing anyway. And then they would have to have the workforce standing by for 1, 2, 3, or 4 weeks. And the whole thing adds up to about £500,000. And with the best Brexit will in the world, that just seems a bit crazy. But Boris is saying if the public wants to put their hand in the pocket and do it, then I guess maybe it will happen. You know, there've been weirder crowdfunding things.
We've done weirder things completely. Mark Francois suggested that maybe the staff of the Today programme do a cake sale and that we start having a whip round. So we could probably do the same thing here, shouldn't we?
I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that as a principle.
The public paying to fund the...
No, I'd like to see the staff of the Today programme.
I'd like to see you doing their bit for charity. Cake sale.
All right, you're on. Next Wednesday, I'll bring in cakes.
Will you? What you've made?
That I've made.
Okay.
But that's going to... I'm going to interrupt you there.
Sorry, Joe?
That's going to be too late.
So next Wednesday.
Basically, the Commons Authority that has said that basically is in charge of Big Ben's bowl has said funding basically has to be in place by January the 17th.
Yeah, so it's very short.
Okay, you can do something tonight.
And cake sale on Wednesday is going to be in vain.
I don't know if anyone... I'll bring in cake anyway.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like cake? But there is currently no mechanism for the public to give money
back to the government.
To this project.
Right.
So I'm kind of with Joe that it's probably not going
to
happen.
Do you think if there weren't these sort of like logistic issues, do you think maybe it would be a slightly divisive thing to sort of ring a bell when at the end of January? Do you think maybe it would inflame some of the tensions between Remain and Leave camps? I think maybe it would. And I don't know if we need to go there as a country. Do you know what I mean?
If it was up to me, every church bell would be ringing.
It's going to be so noisy. I think they've refused it. Did you see that the Union of Bell Ringers have said that they won't get involved in politicised bell ringing?
Oh, those campanologists are very political.
Yeah, they won't. No, they don't want. They want to remain an apolitical institution.
Politically independent.
Yeah, politically. It's very important to them. It's going to be bloody noisy at the end of January if everyone's got their phone alarms and their car alarms and everything going off. I think it might be a little divisive. I get it, but it doesn't feel like a kind of bunting a time because we have got 11 months of trade negotiations and...
It feels like a sense of relief, whatever side you're on, I think, that something happened.
Something happened.
Not just this... eternal quagmire of, you know, us going nowhere sort of thing.
Do you think, seriously, that it is kind of front page news?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a fantastically populist story, yeah.
Do you think it reflects a bigger debate?
In the pub tonight or last night.
Is that where you were?
You ain't going to be talking about the minutiae of the trade deals. You're going to be talking about Big Ben, and that's... You know, what makes a great story?
Might you be attending Nigel Farage's Brexit carnival that he's seeking to get a licence for outside Westminster as well?
I probably won't be there, to be honest.
I
think I'm busy that day.
You're washing my hair. Joe, would you like to go to sort of Nigel Farage carnival?
I will be on January the 31st. It'll be 12 o'clock Brussels time. I'll be likely standing outside of the various European institutions waiting for the British flag to be lowered.
Very melancholy. Oh my God.
There must be a fan de siècle kind of thing going on there with everyone clearing their desks and sort of, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like when Lehman Brothers collapsed, you know, and everyone's like walking outside with their boxes of staplers.
Grabbing the absolute.
and like company bits.
Grabbing the packs of A4 paper for the printers at home, you know.
Very much a tale of two sides, this, isn't it? So we think it would be great if the bell could chime, but there is no floor, and £500,000 is a lot of money to spend.
There are better ways of spending it.
Do you think maybe if the great British public wanted a bung a bob somewhere, they could put it somewhere else, maybe to some good use? Like the homeless people that will be sleeping outside on the 31st of January or the... I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too woke.
Flybe needs a couple of quid to keep the airline up.
Oh, it does indeed, yeah. That's what we could do.
So,
Yes.
Bung a bug to flyby.
It's really hard to say.
And there are no rude words that it could that you could accidentally say by pronouncing that, but it does feel quite wrong. Okay, so
flick
we
a
won't.
Fiver to flyby.
So next week, Paul, maybe you can bake us some cakes and you could make some cakes. Brexit
right.
bunting that we could have.
I'm going to make some Brexit cakes. Brexit we should YouTube cakes. It next week.
Oh, they'll be so hard, see my Brexit. Hard to swallow. Hey. It'll take a long time, Ray.
and you won't get them for another 3 years.
God, the idea of you baking is really giving me some very strong visuals. Okay, so do we think this debate is going to rage, or is this just like a nice bit of distraction from the chaos around us?
Well, the Big Ben thing.
Yeah, Big Ben thing.
I think Joe's hit the nail on the head. It's something of a 3-day wonder or a 4-day wonder, I guess, in this case. Yeah.
There is some much other stuff going on that you're incredibly excited to talk about, which is the Labour leadership contest. Do you remember the Labour Party?
Yeah, vaguely.
They're the lesser spotted Labour MP now. They're looking for a new leader. I think we had all agreed it was going to be a lady, but now it's definitely going to be a man. You've obviously been following this very closely. I know you pay close attention to the Labour Party. What do you make of the candidates in the debate so far?
Well, I have to say, said... I think it would be good for a woman, but yeah. I thought it was always going to be Keir Starmer, mate, because he looks
a man.
No, he looks the part. Like, Margaret Thatcher looked the part, didn't it? It's not a male-female thing,
what
right?
What part? Yeah.
But,
like A-pod.
You look at some of the other candidates and you really think, you go into a room with Vladimir Putin, he's going to eat you for breakfast.
Who do you think he'd be most likely to eat?
Oh, well, probably all of them, to be honest.
On toast.
Right. Kebab. But Starmer's the front runner, and he will probably win. What I found hilarious, and I wrote a piece last week about, was this fantastic kind of scramble to show us all how poor and working class they
are. There's been a lot of gritty videos, haven't there? Yeah, lots of I grew up on this estate for 10 minutes, Keir, and then I became a lord or sir.
Well, Sir Keir.
Yeah, and Lady,
Lady Emily Thornberry.
Lady Emily Thornberry.
There's a clue there, isn't there, that they may not be the working class kickers of...
no.
But Keir's taking the word millionaire off his Wikipedia page, just in case anyone...
So have you, though. You made me take it out of the introduction.
Lady Emily Thornberry saying, there was an interview with her saying, oh yeah, my mum was on benefits, and like, you know, as if she grew up on some tough council estate. When in fact, she is, as you point out, a lady. And, she said her dad was out of work. He was out of work in between scrambling a living as the Director General, Assistant Director General of the United Nations. a jobbing Assistant Director General of the... It got work when it could.
A freelance, you know, oh God.
Tried to put food on the table somehow. And it just that scramble for the Northern, what they perceive to be, in a very patronising way, the Northern working class vote.
Do you think it... Because after the election, we were all like, yeah, the Labour Party needs to look and sound a bit more like the North, and it would be great if the leader had some funny vowels like you.
Thanks, yeah. talking about patronising.
But do you actually think, like, the message, like, what message do you think, what would those voters behind the red wall, the old red wall, what do they respond to? Is it, like, stories of aspiration and, do you know what I mean? Like, what? Because it does feel very patronising to be like, oh, yeah, I had it really toughly.
I mean, it's you can be posh and a good Northern Labour MP. Jack Straw was my MP years ago. Well, he was MP for Blackman for years. And he was an Oxford boy and he was a bit posh, but he understood people, and specifically he understood the British people in the way that the Labour Party in recent years, and obviously, you know, as we found out last month or the month before, completely misreads the real British person, the real sense of what a British person thinks, feels, wants, needs, hopes for, dreams for, blah, blah, blah. So they need somebody with that. That's the only thing that anyone, you know, north of Watford Gap would really respect. It doesn't particularly matter if they're working class or, well, you know, they'll vote for Boris, and Boris is posh as they come.
Quite.
So,
Joe, who do you think, knowing the people that you know over in Brussels, who do you think they would respond to the best, or who do you think would be eaten on toast to coin, or kebabbed, I think you said. Who would be kebabbed by the Europeans?
Who would be kebabbed? Well, Keir Starmer, they say, is a real details man, and he actually had probably quite a good Brexit. But Labour, they're irrelevant. They're out of power for 5 years. Brussels is going to be dealing with Boris Johnson and Boris Johnson only unless he does something incredible that means he's ousted from power early. But that's, it's not going to happen. So who Brussels thinks is good is irrelevant. It's they are dealing with Boris Johnson.
Who have you thought has performed particularly well in these hustings?
As I mentioned, Boris, Keir Starmer had a good Brexit, and he is across the detail.
Bit of a Freudian slip, that, wasn't it?
Well, yeah.
Keir Boris. Yeah. Absolutely. I am personally kind of a I think maybe it's time for like a Lisa Nandy, someone from outside of London. Because how is Labour going? The question is, how is Labour going to reclaim its heartland, that supposed red wall? Because that is where they lost their votes. They lost basically the working class kind of towns outside of London who would previously say, we rely on the Labour government to keep us propped up. So maybe it's time for someone out of this kind of metropolitan elite to actually step forward and say, look, let's actually transform the Labour Party into what it once was.
The problem for me is that even Keir Starmer, who again I think is a kind of Labour moderate really, has been saying things like, we don't want to return to the bad old days of Tony Blair. And you kind of think, well, when you actually were in power and won...
He probably means the illegal war, doesn't he?
He means... Yeah, but the years before that, everyone just like comes out with this kind of lazy, oh, Blair, that's Iraq, isn't it? Before that, the Labour Party were a useful, good government for the country at the time. There's no question about it, right?
Yeah.
And the idea that the Labour Party don't want to return to that because they've been so wildly successful with Corbynism is insane. Yeah. You know, continuity Corbynism, it's like, it completely boggles the mind.
I can see on your notes you've written Jess Phillips might be the real deal.
I quite like Jess Phillips.
Yeah.
Jess Phillips, right? I think she talked quite a lot of sense. And again, she plays a bit of the, you know, I'm dead working class, mate.
It's the hoop earrings.
She's a nice middle class girl, but
you can be nice sensible. And working class too, you know.
I am. Right. I was writing the Pulp song Common People.
Yeah,
right. There's a lot of that going on, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
I want the vote of, you know, they want the vote of common people like you.
Yeah,
is the thing. And there's a line at the end of that song about everyone hates a tourist. And I think that's completely true of anyone who pretends to be something that they're not in politics.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the only thing that it's a dangerous game for them to play because people aren't thick and they can see through it a mile away.
I really like Jess Phillips too, but I just can't see it. I don't see her kind of...
In a room with Putin.
I don't know. I have problems with that.
But as a politician, I think she's incredible. I think she's really good.
And I kind of hope this doesn't damage her if she doesn't.
Absolutely.
I kind of hope she continues to be an amazing campaigning politician because I think she's fab. Yeah. Okay, so we think it'll be Keir Starmer, but kind of irrelevant.
But I remember getting the unions on side is a big thing. And it was, I think, Unison that swung the deal for
Ed
Miliband.
Ugh.
Against the run of play, massively against the run of play. That was a sort of 11th hour thing and suddenly came out of nowhere because he got the backing of the biggest union. And that was the beginning of the real Labour Party problems, I think. So who knows where this is going to end up. The sensible thing, surely, if you're interested in getting votes and getting back into power, would be Keir Starmer, I think.
Yeah.
For the reasons we've already said.
Joe, I'm going to share your anecdote that you told us before we started recording, that Joe is a member of the Labour Party but can't figure out how to cancel his subscription, which is a little bit like, you know, when you have a magazine or Netflix and you just don't know how to get out of or LinkedIn Premium. That's another thing that's impossible to cancel.
Minute type right at the bottom is not, if you want to unsubscribe from the Labour Party.
So, Joe, who would you cast your vote for? I mean, you don't have to say because I appreciate it's a secret ballot, but it would be good to fill some time.
I must admit, I've not closely watched the deputy spot. I found it amusing that Richard Bergen was standing outside of the Parliamentary Labour Party office, basically begging people to back him so he could get his 21 or 22 nominations.
Yeah.
Which
very
is
undignified. Yeah.
So, as I said, I think the Labour Party needs a kind of a bit of a kick up the backside, and probably someone that's not from London, not part of it, not
it's Lisa Nandy, I can tell.
This shadow cabinet that's been so horrendous for his party and for his voters. Like, imagine, like, there's like, we, well, I know it's now weeks ago. It's like, we're near. There were months since the election, isn't it? Almost, but these Labour voters who, or people, constituencies who have voted Labour all of their lives in the North,
yeah,
and then suddenly to back the Tories. There's something deeply wrong, isn't there?
Yeah,
so I think it needs a whole kind of a reset and a new way of thinking. And
I think Lisa Nandy understands
like
that.
Jeff Phillips and Lisa Nandy are kind of promising that.
I think she was one of the few people that gets that you're not in power to teach voters how to vote. You're there to serve their will, basically. And she gets that. But again, it's the in a room with Putin thing with Lisa Nandy again. I just don't. See it.
Who would want to be in a room with him, though? That's the other thing. It's the inclination, isn't it? No, it's a good test. But I feel like, are there any female leaders that you can see in the room with Vladimir Putin? Like, is it framing things in that debate? What is skewing the gender bias a bit on this? Do you know what I mean?
Maybe the world.
I'm not
accusing
you at all. Okay, that's what I'm saying. Genuinely,
you have to be. If the game is to become the prime minister, and if you're the prime minister, you're an international statesman on a world stage, statesperson. Sorry.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, apologies.
I don't think you like person though. You always, I remember you always scream across the newsroom, find out if it's a man or find out if it's a woman.
Right, yes, absolutely. Statesman or stateswoman. Right. Mm. But you have to be. You have to be that. You have to be good enough and big enough and ugly enough to get in a room with Putin or get in a room with Trump or get in a room with anyone.
Boris.
And punch, you know, above your weight, basically. Yeah. And it's just hard to see that from.
Do you think Theresa May ever exhibited those kinds of qualities?
No, not at all.
Do you think Hillary Clinton ever has?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think she's...
Benazir Bhutto?
It's like 20 questions.
Kim Kardashian?
Kim Kardashian, I'm definitely. I'd pick Kim against anyone. Putin would be on his mind.
Yeah, I think she could floor him. Okay, yeah. So we are interested in the Labour Party leadership contest, but we don't think it's overly significant, which is quite standard.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah.
Obviously, Boris and Jeremy Corbyn are going head-to-head at PMQs today. I guess this is a chance for Boris to talk about, what do you reckon it'll be today? Iran?
No, that was all last week, wasn't it?
So what's he talking about this week? Flyby?
Well, hopefully. But
Matt Hancock, you've got his NHS stuff
on
there.
There is. They're spending a lot of money on the NHS. They're going to push that $34 billion.
Yeah, it's loads of money.
But the NHS is expensive.
Mm.
It has a budget, the GDP of a middle-sized country. We always forget that. It's massive.
Could that be led by a woman? It's a middle-sized one.
No, a country.
If it were a country, yeah.
No, I think last time I checked, it had the GDP of something like Pakistan.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah. So it's a huge.
So a necessary injection of cash, but sexy big number for the...
Yeah, yeah, it is, you know.
For people.
And it clearly needs it. I don't know if you've been in hospital recently, but...
Just have a facelift and it was fine.
My sister-in-law came over from Spain and was unfortunate enough to end up in hospital. And she said, I cannot believe your hospitals.
Oh, gosh.
They're decrepit and ancient.
Oh, that's
antique.
Horrible. Yeah, that's horrible for two reasons, isn't it? Yeah, I hope she's all right.
She's fine.
Sending her love and best wishes from the podcast.
They do get the best care in the world, by the way.
What, in Spain?
No, in Britain.
Oh.
It's just
I don't
the
mean in your house.
No, it's just that the hospitals are decrepit.
Okay.
But the medical staff are second to none.
I've got to ask, because it is an ongoing issue, Megxit.
Yes.
So the decision that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle made to step back from their roles as senior royals and kind of split the time between here and Canada. What do you think of that? And do you think it's right that Boris has kind of stayed out of it? And Joe, it would be great to have your thoughts on this as well as a...
Joe, do you want to go first?
Tea towel collecting royalist.
I feel like a million cans of worms are about to be opened.
Just be careful, everyone can. Specifically the political response I'd like us to talk about.
Oh, right, okay. I was about to say, let me be abundantly kind of clear that I am so glad that I am in another country and not subject to the 24
hours. So are Harry and Meghan.
So are you going to
say? Yeah. So is Meghan, yes, so is Harry. I've performed my own kind of independence movement a long time before then.
Are you hoping to become financially independent at some point?
but let's actually think about it. they are. We talk about kind of taxpayer burdens like the NHS. The royal family are kind of, we pay for them in our taxes. So if one of them does want to be independent, what's the problem? Like, that should we can consider that a saving?
That's very true. Yes.
I actually don't agree. I think that we should keep paying for their security. I think I stand with Preeti Patel on this and Emily Thornberry, that I think even if they do decide to split their time between here and another Commonwealth or any country, I think we owe it to them both to pay for their security. I mean, Harry served in Afghanistan for, was it 10 years? And they're still part of our treasured royal family. So I should hope we keep them safe. I think it would be a huge target.
We will anyway.
I don't think that's in question, is it really? Yeah. But yeah. No, you're right. Harry's actually, for all the criticism he's got, is a brilliant bloke. Look what he does for charity. The Invictus Games for kind of injured former war veterans and British Army kind of people who left. He's fantastic, and actually that is something that probably the government should be doing itself, but he's taking it upon himself to kind of raise this issue and make it a big deal, which is brilliant. And like, yeah, look, so if the bloke wants to leave and like kind of leave the public eye a bit, or actually concentrate his efforts on not being kind of Britain's kind of carpet to roll out every time you need a diplomatic kind of handshake done. Yeah, let him go and do his own thing. I think the Queen actually, and Guy Verhofstadt yesterday, to kind of bring the connotation in, said absolutely she's been really flexible and used that as a moment to encourage Boris Johnson to be flexible in Brexit negotiations.
Such a good
to bring it back to Brexit.
Brilliant segue.
I think what is quite sad is that. I know this is really about constitutional issues, but the royal family and Britain will lose a little bit of sparkle, really, if they disappear. You know?
I agree. I think they're a real asset to this country. Really they glamorous,
are,
cool.
They are the star royals, aren't they? Have been for a few years, and they do have that star quality, that extra. And whatever you think about the politics of it and blah blah blah, we'll be a bit the poorer if they leave. I think
I completely agree with you. So.
God. That's a moment for cake.
If only you'd done your baking last night. There was an interesting YouGov poll that people who voted for Brexit are less inclined to want them to leave, and people who voted Remain are more inclined to let them leave, in a kind of perverse flipping of the coins. But I think we can kind of see how that might follow. Yeah. Okay, so we wish them well. But yeah, I agree with you. Use a bit of the shimmer.
I'll tell you something as well. It is complicated. And I think there's more chance that we'll get a Brexit before we get a Megxit.
You're so good at this.
You could look at all the similarities. Look, the Queen had called an emergency summit. She had working parties putting dossiers on potential outcomes. Yeah. There's a transition period. It's sort of like the Brexit similarities. We've almost been
put forward a Megxit leaving document three times and had it refused. Before you finally got it through.
As long as it's not 600 pages, exactly. I might consider reading it.
Chaps, well, this has been a great episode of Megxit, the final countdown. Thank you, Joe. It's been great to speak to you. Paul, great to have you back in the fold. It's been a little
thank
while
you
since we heard
yes,
your dulcet
indeed,
tones.
Yeah. Well, I'm back for good.
Thank God. Excellent. Until next time. Thanks, chaps. See you later,
thank
Joe.
You. Goodbye.
Well done for making it to the end of an episode of Brexit The Final Countdown. If you're still enjoying the countdown, you can subscribe for free. And if you're really enjoying the countdown, you can also leave us a review.